From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 141 with guest Mitch Garvis, recorded Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, how's it going?
All is well, my friend. All is well. And, you know, we are getting some email every so often, although I haven't been reading them lately. But if you do have a question or a concern or idea for a show on Run As, please send us an email at info@runasradio.com.
Yeah, your information, your questions, your input is really a lot of what drives who we talk to on the show and the topics that we bring up.
Obviously, it's time for me to get a bunch of Run As mugs made up so I can bribe for more emails, too.
I want one, too, when you get one.
Okay. It's on my list of things to do. Well, let's dive right into the show here. We have another returning guest and one of my favorites, Mitch Garvis. Mitch is an IT trainer with a passion for community. Having founded and led two major Canadian user groups for IT professionals, he understands both the value and rewards of helping his peers. After several years as a consultant and in-house IT pro for companies in Canada, he now works with various companies creating and delivering training for Microsoft to its partners and clients around the world. He is a Microsoft certified trainer and has been recognized for his community work with the prestigious Microsoft Most Valuable Professional Award. He is an avid writer and blogs at garvis.ca. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, Mitch.
How are you guys doing today?
Real good. And I hear you're in my town.
I am. I'm sitting overlooking the beautiful mountains from the Fairmont Vancouver waterfront and just really enjoying the weather here.
Welcome to the best place in the world, my friend.
Nice spot.
Thank you very much. Now, if I only had one of those Run As Radio mugs to be drinking my coffee from, I'd be all set.
All right. There's obviously a list of mugs I need to get done here. So, Mitch, we were literally talking yesterday, and I said, you know what I really need to show on? The Microsoft Deployment Toolkit 2010. And you said, hey, I'm talking about that in Vancouver this week.
Well, that's right, Richard. I've been on a roll on Microsoft Deployment Toolkit 2010 for the last 6 months or so, mainly because you know that ever since BDD 2007 or Business Desktop Deployment 2007, I've been an avid deployment guy, and we even spoke two or three years ago about BDD on the show. And when I look at some of the new features of MDT 2010, I really have to say, wow, these are huge improvements. Now, the old version 2008 was great, and there are a couple of new features that make me say, wow, they actually found something to improve on a good thing.
So before we jump into new features and stuff, for people who are not familiar with what the Deployment Toolkit is, why don't you give us a quick rundown? You know, who uses it and what do they do with it?
Let me explain this to you as if I was explaining it to my mother. We all have a computer. Most people, once in their life, will either have to install an operating system or have someone else install an operating system for them. That's not who the toolkit is for. Imagine you have two computers and you want them to be identical, or you have 10 computers and you don't want to spend half an hour to an hour on each one installing the operating system and all of your applications. Imagine you have 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 computers where you want to install an operating system and applications and patches and drivers, and then you need the toolkit. So the toolkit is a interface that allows us, or an application from the Solutions Accelerator team at Microsoft, that allows us to import our operating systems, and it's the source files. We are importing, if I look at mine right now, I have the source files for all versions of Windows back to Windows XP Service Pack 3, and I've imported the source files from the original source media. I then have my applications in another tab, and here I have Microsoft Office 2007 and Office 2010 beta, and my Adobe Reader and my Flash Player and my this is for personal use and for a demonstration I have tonight. So I have Microsoft Security Essentials, which is the new antivirus offering from Microsoft.
Right.
And I can import any application that I would need here. I then have a tab for out-of-box driver, so anything that is non-standard or not included in the base Windows installation, but I need in my corporation or in my environment. I then have a tab for packages, and packages can be patches. They can be service packs. They can be anything that you would normally either slipstream in or install right after you install the operating system. They could be language packs, for example.
I gotcha.
And all four of those together are the building blocks for what our computers are. Now, like I said, for a single computer, this would be a waste of time.
Right.
Because for one single computer, I install my operating system, and then I install my applications. And if I were to build my deployment environment in MDT, that it would then take the same amount of time to do it, and it isn't necessary. But if I want to do an office of five computers, I can import all of my operating systems, applications, drivers, and packages. I can then create a task sequence. The task sequence literally says, what do you do first? What do you do next? Do you wait? Do you not wait? And that goes from picking up information, picking up your profile, formatting or partitioning your hard drive, installing the operating system, pressing next. All of that happens in the task sequence. And once you have your task sequence, you build your deployment point. The deployment point is going to be either a network share where you boot from Windows PE or Windows pre-installation environment into the deployment share, and from the remote network share, it installs your operating system and all of your applications. Mm-hmm. Or it can be on a DVD where you do that from, or it can be on a USB key. So now we're all playing with these little netbooks, like my little Dell that I have here. There's no CD-ROM in it. There's no DVD or CD-ROM. So I have to have another way of installing my operating system. And if I happen to be sitting in a hotel room in Vancouver, I don't have my network infrastructure to play with. So I'm going to build a USB key with my operating system and my applications or my entire media deployment point, plug it into my netbook, turn it on, and boot from USB, and everything gets done automatically.
No kidding.
That's what the deployment toolkit does for me.
Will it actually build a bootable USB for you too?
It doesn't boot the bootable USB. What it does is it gives you all of the files that you would copy onto a bootable USB. And you can go to my website at garvis.ca, and there's a very simple blog post called Creating a Bootable USB Drive. It's five or six simple steps in disk part. And it will also create an ISO image for you. So if you're not creating a USB, if you're creating a DVD, all you have to do is burn your ISO image to your DVD. Now, there's a third option that we said before is the network boot. And the network boot, I have several ways of doing it. I can send you a link. If you have a Windows XP or a Windows Vista machine running, I can send you a link. And you click on that link, and it accesses my network deployment point, and it kicks off the installation from there. Or I can create for you, for machines that you're not upgrading, a Windows PE disk that will access my network, or I can import that Windows PE disk into Windows Deployment Services and have Windows DS as my network boot, and that accesses my deployment share created in MDT. So I have all sorts of options here. And the great part about this is everybody says, you know, this sounds very complicated. I have been preaching to crowds for 3, 4, 5 years on how this works. Mm-hmm. And everybody's always said it's not worth the trouble to learn and it's not worth the time to set up. Well, then when I set foot in front of their audience and while I'm talking and joking with them, in about 55 minutes have not only set up the environment from scratch, but also kicked off my first deployment.
Right.
Now, if I'm talking over that, then chances are it could have been done in 20, because you know that I like to talk. Then we have a ball game. then they say, wait a minute, 20, 25 minutes to create a deployment infrastructure. Maybe this is something I should look into.
Now, when you're describing this, you're talking about I have a tab for this and I have a tab for that. This is a wizard-driven or a tool that I can use to do this. I'm not cobbling this together and going into INI files or, you know, creating my own XML files. This is something that helps me along the way.
There are XML files in the background. There are INI files in the background. You don't see any of them. You load the deployment workbench. The deployment workbench is a Microsoft management console that has three columns, and I'm looking at them right now. The first column is my navigation. My second column is what's within each tab in the navigation column. So if I click on operating systems, I see all of my operating systems. And if I click on task sequences, I see all of my task sequences. And my third tab is my actions pane. And that's it. So if I were to, for example, I wanted to create a media deployment point right now, I would go into the navigation bar under advanced configurations. I click on media. And in the actions pane, I click on new media. And I'm going to do it for you right now. I'm going to say, I have a directory. I actually have to create that directory on my hard drive in order for that to work. So let's say I'm creating a media point, and I'm going to call it media. On my E drive, my media path is E:media. My comments, this is my media deployment point. I click on next. Gives me all the details. Next, thank you very much. And it has taken it's done, by the way. We're finished. I'm looking at the confirmation script that says it's completed successfully. And it says it's created my new deployment point new media deployment point. Now, it hasn't copied all of the files into that yet. That's the next step. And I told you there were two huge new features in NDT 2010. The first one is that it's all PowerShell driven. So on this confirmation screen, I can click on View Script and see the PowerShell script that is everything that happened in the background. So I would have to do if I wanted to recreate this is save this PowerShell script and import it into my new deployment point. Imagine the repercussions for a small business consultant who has 20 clients, 30 clients, 50 clients, where he only has to, rather than going through everything, all he has to do to make sure that every environment that he manages is a uniform environment is copy all of his PowerShell scripts from his gold image and bring them over to every other client. He could then have a $20 an hour technician do this rather than having to spend his valuable time making sure that everything was identical across the board.
You know, Mitch, that raises a question in my mind. If you are dealing with multiple companies as a consultant, for example, or even if you're an organization that doesn't have maybe a volume license agreement, so you have to deal with individual installation or, you know, software license keys for each copy of Windows, for example, does that work in this environment, or does it require sort of a single key volume license type of application?
It absolutely works in this environment. Let me go through. I'm going to create a new deployment share, and I'm going to call it deployment share 1, and I'm going to give it a new name called deployment share 1 string, and I'm just going to go through this. Now, my next screen is allow image capture, and I'll talk about that in a minute, and I can say yes or no. The next screen asks user to set the local administrator password, yes or no. The next screen is do you want to ask users for a product key? Now, in what we're calling a LTI or a light touch installation,
right?
This isn't all done automatically. It's for the most part automatically, and at the other end, there's a end user who presses a few buttons based on the script that you've told them. You give a new employee a printed sheet of paper that says follow these instructions, and they go through about 7 or 8 screens, and they run their deployment.
I remember way back in, 2007, you talked about light touch and zero touch installations. It sounds like you're kind of going back to the same theme here.
Deployment methodology for Windows Vista and Windows 7 hasn't changed a whole lot. LTI, light touch, and zero touch, or ZTI, are still very much in play. And if I do have an organization which has a configuration manager or a system center config manager set up, then I could certainly set up my ZTI. But this is a simplified deployment for anybody to use. This is for companies of fewer than 500. This is for companies that have, or let's say 500 or fewer workstations. Gotcha. So they can set this up, ask the end user to enter their product key because it's written on a sticker on the side of their box.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to worry about volume license keys anymore. Now, the alternative to that is I can say, don't ask the user for a product key. And I have my volume license key from my company because you can get one if you have 5 workstations, I believe, or 5 copies of Windows.
Right.
I enter that. It gets pushed down. And that's another step that the end user or the guy at the other end pressing keys doesn't have to input.
Mitch, why don't we dig into drivers just a little bit? Because I think that's the hardest part of these, especially operating system level deployments, is how do you deal with the different driver requirements of different machines?
Sure. Drivers. Now, if I were to install my Windows 7 on a machine I bought 6 months ago, that was a standard desktop with a standard or a common video card that's included in the Windows 7 media, I don't need to worry about drivers. But let's say I am looking at a Dell Latitude E6500, like the one I have in front of me. Now, there are some components here that are not standard. The fingerprint reader, the card scanner, the card slot. All of these are hardware components that are not standard and are not included in the Windows 7 build that we get our media from. So what I would do, if I had 10 of these or 20 of these or 50 of these or 500 of these in my organization, I would go into my deployment share, into the out-of-box drivers tab, and I would import my drivers. I would probably create a new folder called E6500. And I would then import all of my drivers that I've downloaded from Dell site, and I would inject those or import those into my out-of-box drivers folder. When the deployment kicks off, the deployment template and the deployment wizard, will detect using WMI calls the type of hardware that is there, and it will install the proper drivers automatically. Now, I can also, imagine I have 100 different sets of hardware in my organization.
Right.
Firstly, I'm going to completely change the way I plan my hardware because that's not a good way of doing it. But I'm going to go into my advanced configuration tab, which is another new feature in the deployment workbench. I'm going to create a profile. And under my profiles, by default, we have everything. We have all drivers and packages. I'm going to create a new selection profile for my E6500. That E6500 will include all of my out-of-box drivers for my Dell E6500. So every time I kick off a deployment, I will kick off using that profile. I will create my Windows, my media deployment point or my network deployment point for a Dell E6500 or for an HP laptop or for an HP tablet. Whichever hardware profile I want, I will import the proper drivers, and it will inject those drivers into the installation so that it gets done automatically. Now, when I install when I use a standard MDT installation, as I'm going to do tonight for my user group meeting, I'm not going to do this. So when I click on, and this is all smoke and mirrors in my presentation, I don't actually show all of the behind the scenes. If I were to click on my computer, manage, look at my drivers, there will be a few drivers missing because they're not included in the standard build. If I created a profile for the particular machine I'm deploying to, that wouldn't be the case. I wouldn't have to do that extra step afterwards. And I would save the end user the need to call IT for help with some of the common ones are fingerprint readers or audio drivers or wireless network cards. All of these things that users will call the IT support staff for help with after the installation, it gets eliminated because this machine was installed from the profile for that particular hardware set.
That's cool. And so you just don't have these issues essentially. You can keep them separate basically based on the hardware. And I've found scenarios where I go and buy a second lot of the same model number of a machine and chipsets have changed.
Yeah, the hardware is actually different.
And that does happen from time to time. Now, the best way to mitigate that, if I were to look at the chipset for my laptop, let's say it's currently at revision 13. If they were to sell me the same laptop 6 months from now and it's revision 15, the best way to mitigate that particular issue is when you buy new hardware, just update the drivers in your deployment point, because when they release new firmware, the new drivers will support the old drivers, even though the old drivers may not support the new firmware. So if you keep your drivers up to date, you don't have to go from machine to machine.
There are also, companies, some of the big supplier companies for the hardware that, will for, a 1 year, 2 year, maybe, I don't know, 3 year, I know at least a couple year period of time, can say, hey, we're going to sell you this. If this is your standard, you settle on this, then we will provide you compatible hardware for the next 1 or 2 years so that you don't have to worry about drivers. They sort of guarantee that for you.
And that's absolutely the case with business class laptops or business class desktops or servers. By the way, I should mention that since we last spoke, the MDT 2010 supports deployment of server operating systems as well. But we'll get into that in another show. So imagine we've released a new firmware that still has perfect compatibility to the old firmware. But if they're perfectly compatible, why did they release a new one? Well, chances are there are improvements to the product that if you're using the old drivers, won't be there. So even if they're providing you the same, that compatibility guarantee, your best bet when you buy new lots of the same hardware is to make sure that you have the latest firmware on hand.
All right. That all makes sense. I know you said servers later, but why don't we dig into this a little bit? How would I do this with servers? How is it different?
It's very simple. We have two operating system platforms. We have a desktop operating system platform, and some of the common features that we'll install on a desktop are applications, are user profiles, are tools and antivirus and things like that. Now, are you going to install the same antivirus on your Exchange server as you are on your Windows 7 client?
Yeah.
Better not be.
Better not be.
No. So the server deployment will allow us to take, rather than having all of those building blocks, we would have, for example, an Exchange server building block, a SQL server building block, and it would deploy maybe a four-point server security block. And all of these would be deployed, and rather than creating a standard client task sequence, we'd create a standard server deployment task sequence.
All right. And I'm just... with Exchange, I just don't feel like I would do it often enough to make that worthwhile. With a web farm, I guess I would buy into that idea.
Absolutely. Now, when you say that you wouldn't do it with Exchange, you're not taking into account that this also works for test environments.
All right.
This works for guys who are testing applications and testing different plugins that may have to deploy the same server over and over again.
Yeah, and I could definitely buy into the idea that using test environments, using this to actually have a standardized configuration. Here's the configuration of our production Exchange server exactly, and we can instantly replicate it. Can I do this with virtual machines as well this way?
I will say that yes, you can, but if you remember the last time we spoke, we talked about System Center Virtual Machine Manager.
Right.
And we're now in VMM 2008 R2. And if you are using a virtual environment, the VMM R2 has some really cool tools to deploy your servers that do include the building block library. So you would have a standard configuration for an Exchange server, and that can be done in a matter of minutes as well. It's just two different ways of doing the same thing.
Okay. And what about updates? Is this just for base deployment and you switch to Windows Update services after that?
That's right. And we are going to include in our base image all of our GPOs. So one of the things we'll say is we need to join a domain, and most of your domain machines will be getting patches automatically.
Right.
Now, if you have major patch releases, such as a service pack or a patch rollup, you can include that as a package. So when you deploy new machines, or better yet, when you redeploy old machines, they get the new patches automatically without having to. Let's face it, if you were to install a Windows Vista machine right now, it would spend an hour and a half downloading patches. Well, rather than having to do that, include that in the deployment, save your WSUS server, and save your bandwidth and save your time.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome approach to it. When we redeploy a machine, is there any way to save the my documents, that sort of thing? Can I use this as a recovery tool for somebody's machine and still preserve their data?
You know, it's not only a recovery tool. This is one of my favorite features in MDT 2010, and it's a feature that you can't get with Config Manager without having MDT 2010, and you can't get it any other way. It's called hard links. The hard links, when the guys who wrote this package told me about this, I said, wow, this I've got to see. Now, if you create your deployment point, unless you change this in the task sequence, one of the things that it's going to do is reformat your hard drive. Now, when you reformat your hard drive, the first thing that it does is it wipes all of your data, right?
Right.
Wrong. What it does is it wipes the table of contents to tell you where your data is, so it looks like you have a blank hard drive. Now, during my demo this evening, I have a Windows XP machine that has 40 gigabytes of documents and videos and music and pictures. It has two or three user profiles, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off my deployment of my XP machine from within Windows XP. It is going to go through the whole process of formatting the machine, but before it does that, it takes a note of where those files are, formats the machine, brings it back up in Windows 7, and restores the links to those files. So right. Rather than having to copy, there are ways of backing up your profile and storing it on a network or storing it on a local hard drive or an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all fine. Those are great ways of doing it. But on 40 gigabytes of data, do you know how much bandwidth that's going to take, how much time it's going to take? Rather than doing that, I changed the operating system underneath it. I've wiped my hard drive, but then I restore those links. And rather than taking several hours and having to plug in an external hard drive or having to measure bandwidth, it's all done for me right then and there.
That's cool.
That, to me, is the coolest new feature of MDT 2010.
This is about not burying your network and shuffling these big chunks of data around.
No shuffling is involved. It's cleaning your hard drive. Your hard drive wants to be cleaned because over the course of 3 years that you're using it, we have clutter. We have all sorts of junk that every user puts on it that we want wiped out.
Yep.
But we don't want the data wiped out. So it literally, imagine you have a piece of furniture. You have a table in the middle of your room, and everything underneath it is dirty. Well, you pick up the table, you vacuum underneath, and you put the table back down. That's what's happening with your files.
Is it just me, or does that feel like voodoo?
I'd be telling you for 3 years, Richard, that deployment is black magic. Because if it takes me an hour to install a machine, how can it take me 5 hours to install 500 machines?
Yeah, no kidding.
But there it is.
Yeah.
This is all, I mean, Arthur Clarke said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Well, this is definitely magic.
Nice.
This is definitely advanced technology.
No.
But if you look at it, it's simple.
Yeah, when you get ready to get into it, I think you've really conveyed that. It is pretty straightforward. So, Mitch, where do folks go to get more information?
For more information, you can go to, there are all sorts of great links, and I'm going to give you a few of them. I'm not corporately involved with any of them, but Microsoft.com/desktop deployment is the main source. And by the way, if you install the deployment workbench, the MDT 2010, which, by the way, did I mention it's a free product? If you install that, all of the documentation is included within. And if you click on the information center and click on documents, you can check for updates to see any changes that they've made recently. So that's one great resource. Another great resource is Extreme Consulting Group. I think it's extremecgi.com. Have some great articles about that. One of the guys who wrote the MDT 2010 recently left and went over there, so he's been publishing like mad. And, of course, the best site on the internet is garvis.ca.
Of course. Mitch, thanks so much for coming on and setting us straight on MDT 2010.
Thanks, Mitch. Good stuff.
Guys, it's always a pleasure. Anytime you want to talk, you just let me know.
All right, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.